It's Sunday, April 26th, and welcome to Higher IQ. You've probably had the experience. A song builds, the melody climbs, the instruments layer, and then the chorus hits, and a chill runs down your spine. Your skin prickles, your eyes might water, you're sitting in your car or standing in your kitchen, and a sequence of sound waves just made your body react as if something physically happened to you. Nothing touched you, no drug entered your bloodstream. Vibrations in the air, organized in a specific pattern, triggered a measurable neurochemical response in your brain. Music is the only art form built entirely on physics, and the question of why it moves us starts with a Greek philosopher walking past a blacksmith's shop 2,500 years ago and ends in a place that neuroscience still can't fully explain. According to legend, Pythagoras was walking past a forge in the 6th century BC when he heard something that stopped him. 4 blacksmiths were striking iron with hammers of different sizes, and some combinations of strikes sounded harmonious while others clashed. Pythagoras rushed inside and discovered that the hammers that sounded good together had weights in simple ratios. 2 hammers whose weights were in a ratio of 2 to 1 produced the same note at different heights, what we now call an octave. A ratio of 3 to 2 produced a perfect fifth. A ratio of 4 to 3 produced a perfect fourth. The more complex the ratio, the harsher the sound. The blacksmith story is almost certainly apocryphal. Hammer weight doesn't actually determine pitch the way the legend describes, but the underlying principle Pythagoras discovered using strings on a monochord is real and has held up for 25 centuries. When you have a vibrating string, the pitch doubles, and the 2 notes sound like the same note at different heights. When you shorten a string to 2/3 its length, you get the interval that forms the backbone of virtually all Western harmony. These relationships aren't cultural conventions, they're physics. The simpler the ratio between 2 frequencies, the more their sound waves align, and the more consonant they sound to the human ear. This is why a major chord sounds stable and a diminished chord sounds tense. In a major chord, the frequencies of the 3 notes form relatively simple ratios, and their sound waves reinforce each other in regular patterns. In a dissonant chord, the frequencies interact in complex ways, creating irregular interference patterns that the brain has to work harder to process. Consonance is ease, dissonance is effort. Your sense of what sounds good or bad is partly your brain's response to how much computational work a particular combination of frequencies requires. The word partly matters. In 2024, researchers at Cambridge, Princeton, and the Max Planck Institute published a study in Nature Communications that challenged Pythagoras directly. They found that listeners actually prefer slight deviations from perfect mathematical ratios. Perfectly tuned intervals sounded sterile. Small imperfections sounded warmer, more alive. More significantly, when the researchers tested instruments from non-Western traditions like the Indonesian boneng, Pythagoras's ratios went out the window entirely. The instrument's physical shape produces frequency components that don't follow the simple ratios, and listeners from cultures familiar with those instruments found those sounds consonant. What sounds good isn't purely physics. It's physics filtered through culture, exposure, and the specific instruments a society builds. If music were just math, it would be interesting but not powerful. What makes it extraordinary is what it does to your brain. In 2011, neuroscientists at McGill University published a study in Nature Neuroscience that measured what happens in the brain during musical chills, the goosebump-raising, spine-tingling response that marks a peak emotional experience with music. Using PET scans and fMRI imaging, they found that listening to music that produces chills triggers the release of dopamine in the striatum, the same reward pathway activated by food, sex, and addictive drugs. Music that subjects described as emotionally neutral produced no such release. Music that gave them chills flooded the reward circuit. The finding that made the study remarkable was the timing. Dopamine was released in 2 distinct phases. The first surge came during anticipation, the moments before the peak, when the listener knew the good part was coming. The second came during the peak itself. 2 different brain circuits were involved. One linked to cognitive and motor systems, prediction, expectation, and the other linked to the limbic system, emotion, reward. Your brain is essentially playing a game with the music. It predicts what comes next based on the patterns it has learned. When the prediction is confirmed or pleasantly violated, the reward system fires. This is why music can make you cry, and it explains something that has puzzled philosophers for centuries. Why an art form with no survival value that doesn't feed you, protect you, or help you reproduce is so deeply embedded in every human culture ever documented? The answer from the McGill research is that music hijacks the brain's reward system by creating patterns of tension and resolution that mirror the anticipation reward cycle the brain uses for everything else. A chord progression builds expectation. It delays resolution. When the resolution finally arrives, especially after a prolonged delay, the emotional release can be overwhelming. The bridge of a song that holds you in suspense, the final chorus that lifts after a quiet verse, the moment in a symphony where the full orchestra enters after a solo passage, all of these are exploiting the same neurological mechanism. Your brain has been holding its breath. The music lets it exhale. Not everyone experiences musical chills with the same intensity. Research has found that people who score high on the personality trait openness to experience, those who tend to be more curious, imaginative, and emotionally aware, are significantly more likely to report chills during music listening. Musical training also plays a role. The more you understand the structure of music, the more precisely your brain can predict what comes next, and the more rewarding the confirmation or violation of that prediction becomes. Expert listeners don't enjoy music more because they're smarter. They enjoy it more because their predictive models are more refined, which means the dopamine response is more precisely calibrated. All of this leads to a question that remains genuinely unresolved. Is musical pleasure universal or cultural? The math suggests universality. Simple frequency ratios produce consonants in any acoustic environment. Infants, before any cultural exposure to music, can detect rhythmic regularities and respond differently to consonant versus dissonant intervals. The brain's reward system fires for music across cultures and age groups. But the Cambridge study complicates this. Indonesian listeners hearing the bonang found consonants in intervals that Western listeners found dissonant. The instrument itself, its physical construction, its overtone structure, shaped what counted as pleasant. Western equal temperament, the 12-tone system that divides the octave into 12 equal steps, is itself a compromise. It slightly detunes every interval except the octave so that musicians can play in any key without retuning. Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier was written to demonstrate the system's versatility. Every piano you've ever heard is, in Pythagorean terms, slightly out of tune. You've just been trained not to notice. The honest answer is that music sits at the intersection of physics and culture in a way that neither fully explains. The physics determines which frequency combinations produce regular wave patterns. Your brain's reward system responds to prediction and resolution. But which patterns you've learned to predict, which resolutions feel satisfying, which instruments sound normal to your ears, all of that is shaped by the specific musical tradition you grew up in. A listener in Bali and a listener in Berlin are using the same dopamine system. They're running different software on the same hardware. The chills are real, either way. So if this comes up in conversation, here's how to think about it. 2,500 years ago, Pythagoras discovered that musical harmony is built on simple mathematical ratios. An octave is 2 to 1, a perfect fifth is 3 to 2. The simpler the ratio, the more consonant the sound. In 2011, McGill researchers found that music that gives you chills triggers the same dopamine release as food, sex, and drugs, with surges during both anticipation and the peak itself. Your brain is predicting what comes next and rewarding you when the prediction lands. But recent research shows that what sounds good isn't purely physics. It's physics shaped by culture, instruments, and exposure. The math is universal. The experience is personal. The next time a song stops you in your tracks, that's 25 centuries of physics, a few milliseconds of dopamine, and a lifetime of learned expectations all colliding in your brain at once. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.